You're listening to BGO Blind Pig, BGO's official roundtable discussion of all things DC football. Come pull up a chair, pour a libation of your choosing, and join in some passionate DC football debate. BGO, a Burgundy and Gold obsession, is the most passionate, intelligent community of Washington football fans on the web since 2009. Join us at www.bgobsession.com.
Evening, fellas. Good to see everybody back again for another episode of the Blind Pig, courtesy of bgobsession.com. Welcome to anybody out there listening to come join the board, have some chats, mix it up. We'd love to have you. Before we get started, as we always do, I'll hit the intros. Top left is Bob. On the board, he hails as Neophyte. Bottom left is Paul. On the board, he is Canadian Hog. Bottom right is John. He hails as Boone. And my name is Derek. I hail as Silent Threat. So please, like I said, come by, hang out, mix it up. Let's have some fun. So,
Paul. Speaking of having fun.
Speaking of having fun.
How about those Commanders?
I asked you this before we got going, Paul. Which one made you feel worse? Post Philly or post Chicago? Now that we're what, 6 days removed from that situation?
I was very vocal about how I didn't like the way the Philadelphia game ended because of, you know, I thought Rivera should have went for two, but that's old news type thing. I obviously feel a lot more numb following the Chicago game. I'm going to be completely honest with you guys. I checked out of the game chat at halftime and I couldn't really stomach watching the second half. So I walked out. I set myself up for failure and disappointment, I think, because that Philadelphia game made me start believing again. I started thinking, okay, maybe this team has turned a corner. We were so competitive against them and, you know, the game was right there for the taking and, you know, we fell a little short. That should be able to be something you build a lot of positive momentum off of. But I was really, really disappointed with the coaching staff in terms of how they didn't have this team ready to play. The team just seemed flat. They seemed deflated. They still seemed like they were fixated on that Philadelphia loss and they couldn't move past it. And in my opinion, that falls on the shoulders of the coaches to help the team move past and get ready to play the next week. And we were so emotionally deflated and flat. And, you know, sadly, it made me feel like I felt for the last 24, 25 years under Dan Snyder. Just deflated, empty, and completely numb. So definitely a lot more disappointed following that Chicago game. And quite honestly, I don't know what level of confidence I have in this team moving forward the rest of this season with this coaching staff. So I'll leave it at that.
This week hurt. And this week hurt. I can forgive a lot of things. Truly, almost anything. The one thing I have a very difficult time forgiving is letting the other team show up with more want to, more passion, more desire. Because that we didn't get beat by. Okay, let's just be real here, right? The 23 Bears are a bad team. They're not a good
football team. They haven't won in over a year, man. I mean, a year.
Right. This is not a good football team. And we made them look like the 85 Bears. And we made them look like the 85 Bears because they showed up and wanted to win. And we showed up and expected them to lay down. And I have a real problem with that. I saw flashes of not just brilliance, but dominance. But they were only flashes. We couldn't, on defense, we couldn't put three solid plays together until the third quarter. They didn't go three and out until the Bears, that is, didn't go three and out until the third quarter. And we would go out and hold them to a yard or less on first down and then drop them for a loss on second down and then give up a big play for a first down or a touchdown in the first half. And it was all just want to. And I have a really hard time with that. I sat here aghast at the fact that my team didn't apparently feel like they had to play hard to win. This is the NFL. There are no easy games. I don't know.
I thought it was really weird. I have a couple things to say, but I thought it was really weird when we found out that Rivera didn't address the team at halftime and with no explanation, because that I've never heard of that. I've never heard of like going into the half and like, oh, talk amongst yourselves. Or maybe he spent so much time asking Jack Del Rio, what the fuck are you doing out there, that he didn't have any time left for the players. I don't know. But here's my thing. It's a week to week league. And you just said it, Bob. It's like the talent differential between good and bad and great and good, it's pretty narrow in the NFL. There's really good talent on every NFL team. That's just the way it's designed, which I like that about the NFL. But so you would expect every weekend, right, there's some team that gets blown out by a team that no one saw it coming, right? Whether it's Dallas, it doesn't matter who it is. Somebody every weekend is getting blown up by a team that everyone else was betting against. It happens. But I think the thing with the Rivera era is it's happened way too many times. It's happened way too many times at home. And really, that was a must-win game. And I say that, obviously, it's early in the season, so that's kind of a weird thing to say. But we're coming off two tough losses, especially the Philadelphia loss, as Paul talked about, you know, the deflating factor there, needing to bounce back strong against a team you should beat. And we couldn't do it. And not only couldn't we do it, but I just jotted down a couple of first half notes. The Bears had a 14-5 first down advantage in the first half. The Bears were 6-for-9 on third down. We only managed 2 conversions. They had 189 offensive yards to 71 for us. And they had a 27-3 lead at the half. It's crazy, you know, to give that I don't know how else you can say it, but we just laid down. And then the last thing I'll say is, after the game, I saw and read a lot of interviews with players, and they were all kind of asked the same question, like, why did you guys come out so flat? Like, what was going on? What? And not one of them, not even Terry McLaurin, had a good answer.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, and to me, that's more concerning. I would have felt better if they all said, you know what, we took the Bears for granted. We didn't take them seriously, and that's on us. I would feel better with that kind of a response than I don't know. Coupled with Rivera being, I don't know if Rivera's checked out or what, but it was just a weird game. There was no emotion on the sidelines even while we were getting, you know, just totally embarrassed in the first half, especially. And I don't understand that, man. I don't understand. And then we don't know why. No one has any. And even today, Rivera, I didn't hear anything. He's putting up signs on the locker room door. You know, I don't know. I think we're past signs on the locker room door at this point. I think Harris had the bar's a little bit higher for the Harris group than, well, I put up a sign on the door. I don't know.
I honestly wonder if Rivera's done mentally. You know, like, I don't know if he's checked himself out, if he's just not willing to. I don't know if the writing's on the wall. Maybe he knows that he's not going to be here next year, and he's just, unfortunately, just not anywhere near as. I mean, he's going to show up to work. He's a professional, right? He's not. I don't think. Don't take this as though I think he's just coasting and he's not going to do his job. I think on some level he will do his job, but I don't think he is as invested. And I don't mean that in a necessarily like he's lackadaisical, but I mean, he survived cancer. His mom passed away. The owner sold the team. He dealt with all the off-the-field stuff. He's dealt with all the on-the-field stuff. He's dealt with all of his personal stuff. And at some point you reach, you might reach a, mentally where he knows the writing's on the wall. He's not going to be the coach beyond this year. It's impossible to get yourself to the point where you're going to flip a Gatorade table or you're going to be that invested. I mean, that's just difficult to be when you're in that position. Now, that doesn't, don't get me wrong, I'm not sitting here advocating for Rivera, because I think somewhere between 60 and 70% of what we saw this past week falls on the coaching staff. At some point, I do have to say the players just got to show up and play. You're a damn professional football player. I don't care if your coach doesn't get you up. You shouldn't need that much to get you up, you know. But
we're just a lot of it, consistent, man. That's the thing that kills me. And it's like, and we all, I know we all felt the same way that Paul did. It's like,
gut checked.
This is the same old, same old. And, you know, I wrote a blog this weekend. It took me 2 days to get out of the funk that they put me in. And shame on me for letting them put me in the funk still, right, after all this time. But I said the last time we potted that I guess I must be, like, on the way to believing again, because the losses are stinging a lot more this season than they have in previous years.
You know,
really, I really feel like after I had time to think about it, I'm like, look, because I was thinking about, like, the Josh Harris shot, joking it up in the owner's box. And I'm like, I was thinking about that. And I'm like, you know what? This isn't his team. It's not his team yet. It's his team legally. But I really think that we should not get fooled into thinking like it's going to be the same old going forward. It might be horrendous football in other ways, but it's going to change. After this season, I really think they're just going to blow the thing completely up. And we're going to be starting over. And I think that game on Thursday night is a reason why we have to do that, because it's not so much that something's wrong when you lose to a team like Chicago, like the way that we did. It's the fact that they don't seem to know why. They don't seem to have any more clue as to why that happened than you or I do. And that, it just can't be that way, man. The coaches have got to be like, I mean, they should have their pants on fire this week. And all I hear is the same kind of, it's a young, if I hear Ron Rivera say it's a young team, it's not a young team. I saw numbers today. We're average. It was a young team 4 years ago when you started calling them a young team. Now it's a bunch of vets and a few new guys sprinkled in. It's not a young team. It's year four. So the fact that he can even still throw that kind of nonsense out there, like, oh, we're still learning how to win. Gee, oh my, for God's sake.
All right, I gotta take a little bit of, I gotta take a disagree a little bit with that last point, John. I saw the same numbers. I saw, you know, the tweet with the, you know, the Redskins' average age is 64 years and X number of days, and basically it puts us right in the middle of the league, right? I mean, as far as our roster is concerned, I didn't go do the math, but I started thinking about the 22 starters. Sam Howell is 23. I think he's 23. Brian Robinson is 22. You know, Charles is 24. Gates is 27. Leno is 32. Wiley's 29. But Cosme's 24. McLaurin is like 25. Dotson's 22. Of our starting 22, we may have one of the youngest starting 22s in the NFL.
Our chosen starters.
Yeah. Our chosen.
You've got veterans sitting on the bench watching.
Exactly. And frankly, I think every team probably has a certain amount of that, right? Because of the way the salary cap is done and because of the way the contracts are done and whatnot, they start, you know, there are a lot of veterans out there that are willing to sign for the vet minimum late in their career to get another year, maybe two in, maybe with a team that's got a chance to win a ring and they have never won a ring, you know. You know, but I mean, we've got a fair number of guys like Cornelius Lucas. He's 32. Hasn't seen the field this season. You know, Tyler Larson is 32. He hasn't seen the field this season. We've got our fair share of those guys. The starting 22, younger than that median 26 years and X number of days, I'm sure. I don't disagree that there's a certain level of that with this team when Rivera says that. However, I am watching a renaissance in another league, in another sport, with a team that I love almost as much as this. who let their best player, one of the best players in the world, go this offseason. And they're playing with a bunch of young guys. And all they really did was change the coach. That's the biggest thing. They changed the coach. And the coach came in, and his attitude is, I hate to lose. I hate to lose. And again, it comes up in every single press conference. He says that every single press conference in some shape or form. I don't hear that from Rivera. I don't remember the last time I heard Ron Rivera say, I hate to lose. The last time, what I remember from Ron are excuses about why we're not winning. Not passion and anger over the fact that we're losing. And he didn't even have that in year one before cancer. He didn't have that the last 3 or 4 years in Carolina. It's not there. And I am a firm believer in the business principle that leadership comes down from the top. That's your head coach in a football team. That's your head coach. Your head coach is going to get some of that from ownership, but Josh Harris has owned this team for less than 3 months. They aren't getting anything there. This isn't his guy. This isn't his front office. He didn't draft a single player on this team. Josh is along for the ride just like the rest of us. And my guess is those shots of him yucking it up and drinking were because he just spent $6 billion on a hot mess and he's realizing exactly what his money got him. Although I think he probably went into it with his eyes open. I really do. So
Bob, all that ragging that I was doing on Rivera, really the point, just to wrap that point up, was I'm trying to be positive about it in that it really, the Dan Snyder era won't be over until this offseason. It's still, and I'm not saying Dan Snyder's to blame for us getting embarrassed by the Bears. That's obviously nonsense, but This is a franchise that that Dan Snyder put together, including Ron Rivera, warts and all, the good and the bad. And until we blow it up, I think we can expect more of the same. We're going to beat some teams this year. And we're like, how could we have beat, it's Miami, but we couldn't beat Chicago. We're going to have those kind of games, and then we're going to probably get embarrassed a few more times, maybe pretty soon.
Was it you, Paul, said you fully expect to lose this weekend and then come out 2 weeks from now and beat Philadelphia?
I don't think I said that.
The Falcons and then beat Philly and be, 5-6 and right back in the thick of the playoff hunt. Somebody put that on the board this week, and I thought, damn, that's distinctly possible.
But that's what this team always does, right? They do enough to hook you back in. And I'm sure that anybody who watched the Chicago game in the second half, the same thing happened to them, right? They did enough in the third quarter for you to get hooked back in, only for them to do what they normally do, which is disappoint us all the time, right?
And that missed kick. I think Sly missed an extra point in that game too. Am I wrong about that?
No, and I think he just missed the field goal.
He missed a 51-yard field goal.
Yeah, he didn't miss it. He didn't miss a PAT.
That was the most deflating thing that could have happened right there, obviously. And I was kind of like you, Paul. I thought maybe we can pull off a miracle here the way it was going. But when he missed that kick, it's just like, it's not going to happen. And then we promptly rolled over on defense.
I was excited again by the beginning of the fourth quarter. You're absolutely right, John. I got pulled back in.
What did you guys make of Howell's performance the whole game, not just the second half?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We want to make sure that you don't miss out on any future BGO Blind Pig podcasts. On our YouTube channel, simply hit the subscribe button. If you're listening to BGO Blind Pig via Apple Podcasts or another podcast provider, go to our description page and click that follow button.
I wasn't unhappy with Howell's performance. I was unhappy with the fact that we dropped him back, 51 straight times, 48 straight times. without even trying to run the ball. I mean, I understand the concept of you're down 27-3, you have to throw the football, but if you don't at least hand the football off once or twice, the defense knows what you're doing. You know, yeah, you're not surprising anybody. And I just, I don't understand the philosophy of not at least trying a draw play or, you know, something. I'm honest. Yeah, but yeah. I thought Hal played a pretty good game, John, in all honesty.
What about you, Paul and Derek?
Yeah, so for me personally, I'm going to kind of tie it back to what Bob was talking about earlier. He was talking about the want-to factor, and one of the things that stood out most for me in regards to Howell this past week is he was one of the few guys that was showing some fight. Mm-hmm. And you want that, obviously, out of your quarterback position. You want other guys on the roster to feed off of that. I mean, if we had 52, 53 Sam Howell mentalities on that roster, I don't think that the Chicago game gets out of hand from the onset. So I was really impressed with that. He's doing enough every single week for me personally to remain engaged and remain intrigued and to be interested in continuing to watch as the season unfolds. I think he's a really promising kid. And, you know, as many people have already mentioned, I just hope to God that the kid, you know, stays upright for the rest of the season. Because beyond him right now, quite honestly, I don't know what else really intrigues me about this team going forward the rest of the season. He's the one piece that I want to see obviously continue to develop and continue to grow and give us some true optimism heading into the off season when, like you said, John, that the rebuild will truly start.
I feel like Sam has, you know, the thing with Taylor Heinicke, the reason he was so loved by fans was just that toughness factor, and he kind of had the moxie factor, and you never felt like we were totally out of a game with him in there. I think Sam Howell's achieved that in six games.
Yeah.
I think he's already matched that. And that's actually a compliment to Taylor Heinicke. I just think he's got that same mentality, but he's got the athletic gifts that Heinicke didn't have.
With the arm. Yeah.
How many times last year did we compare Taylor Heinicke to guys in the NFL with big arms and big bodies and say, you know, I want to put Taylor's mentality in that body. We may actually have done that to a certain degree. We may have that right now. Mentality in an athletic body with Sam Howell.
Do you guys feel the same way I do? Like, I don't even want him to have to stand up after the game and talk after a loss like that, because it's like, it's not your, he's the last person on that roster whose fault. Yeah. Who should feel embarrassed or talk about how he didn't do enough. I mean, he did enough. The first half was tough, but I don't think it was because of Hal.
Yeah. After the Buffalo game, he needed to stand up and take questions. You know, he threw four interceptions, and half of those sacks were because he was holding the ball too long. By the end of the Chicago game, he was taking sacks not because he was holding the ball too long, but because Chicago knew we were going to throw the football. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and they were bringing everything. I mean, I just sat there in my living room aghast. It was like there was nobody covering anybody because everybody was rushing the passer. Howell for me has cemented his position as the guy going forward at this point in time.
At least through the end of this year.
Yeah, at least through the end of this year. Although, frankly, I think he's the guy next year.
I hope so. But at the end of the day, I hope we have a new GM who picks his head coach, and the two of them decided that it's Howell. That's one of the benefits of having Howell in the position that we're in. He's not signed to an expensive long-term contract. He's not a top five, top 10 pick that's going to be going into his second season, so you're obligated to roll with him. I think that's another reason why he's so valuable, is that if the next regime wants to make him the guy, they can do it, and they can do it affordably. And if they ultimately decide that they don't want to make him the guy, we can move on, and it's not too much of, you know, we're not setting the franchise back years. John, to answer your question, I think Howell was up and down this game, but I think Howell was not the reason this team lost this weekend either. When you ask your quarterback to throw the ball 51 times, to expect them to be perfect is not only unfair, but it's impossible. I was watching plays in the late third, fourth quarter when the game was still within reach, mind you, where Howell is fighting for extra yards and he's throwing the ball, you know, he's making smarter decisions, and he appears to have been learning from Buffalo. The interception, he had one interception. It was untimely. He kind of forced it as they were leading into the drive at the end of the half. You wish he could have that back. But once again, the team, you know, he came back out in the second quarter or in the second half, and he was fighting. And he was fighting in a way that a lot of guys weren't. I've got the highlights or the low lights, however you want to put it, up. And there were plays where, you know, Chase Young, and we can talk about Chase Young, and the touchdown to DJ Moore. Chase Young is blatantly being held and he just stops rushing. Just carries himself out of the play. There are other plays where, you know, guys just seem flat-footed or beyond inconsistent, or they've just decided, I'm not saying they're taking plays off, but you wonder where that level of effort is. Like, look, man, when you're down 20-3, leading into halftime, and you've got a running quarterback and he breaks the pocket. Yeah, I know I'm not advocating a dirty hit, but if you have an opportunity to make him feel something, you have to do that. You know what I mean? Like, you have to complete the play. You cannot just let it go. Like, and I think that's a lot of what we saw that was that concerns us. And it's not just concerned us under Rivera, it's concerned us for 20 years. Look, three things are absolutely true in life: death, taxes, and that the Redskins / Commanders won't show up on primetime. Okay. We've had some moments that make us feel differently, but this is more often than not what happens. And ultimately it happened, and the defense looks terrible, but I don't think that's
DJ Moore. I couldn't believe this. I knew it was bad, but he only caught 8 balls. 3 of them were for touchdowns, and eight completions for 230 yards. Good God, if we could have just covered DJ Moore, we probably win that game.
You want to hear the scarier stat? Only 3 players on the Bears caught a pass.
That's like a whole offense is passing production. A lot of games.
Three offensive players on the Chicago Bears had a logged reception in that game.
That's the second. That's twice in 2 weeks. We've let the other leading receiver come out and hang a big number on us.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, and I'm sorry. So what that tells me is that the coaching staff learned nothing from what AJ Brown did to us the preceding Sunday, because they let DJ Moore's the only thing they had.
Yeah, I mean, Fields didn't beat us with his feet. The running back, the tight end, they all had decent games, but we pretty much contained everyone else. But that kid, oh my God!
So here was the moment, and this kind of ties into the interception Derek was talking about a second ago. Sam Howell threw an interception in an inopportune moment in our end of the field, you know, the place you absolutely don't want to throw an interception. Last year, I watched this defense bow up in defense of Taylor Heinicke how many times, and hold opposing teams to field goals when Heinicke put them in a bad situation, hold opposing teams, hold better offenses than the Chicago Bears offense to a field goal, and in some cases, pushed them back and forced a punt. We gave up a touchdown to them, Chicago Bears.
Yep.
And who was it? Who caught that? Who caught that? Eight plays, it was six plays, 36 yards, and it ended with, oh, that was the one to the tight end. That was the one to Komet, not to Moore.
DJ Moore needed a break.
DJ was on the side getting oxygen, you know. But I don't, that's the thing I don't get. I mean, last year I watched the defense come back out on the field, tired, beat up, not wanting to be there.
And rise up.
And it just wasn't there. By the end of the game, I was so sick of hearing Mike Tirico talk about four first-round draft picks.
That doesn't matter anymore.
No.
Hasn't mattered for 2 years.
Just like it doesn't matter that Sam Howell's a fifth-round draft pick.
Right.
And literally played better than Justin Fields, a first-round draft pick.
I mean, I'm watching highlights of this game. There was a 3rd and 12, and Howell must have gotten hit 4 or 5 times, and he fought and ended up getting 11 yards.
That's why this conversation is why I brought up that poster. And I know that's like social media. You know, we're throwing out steak to the hungry lions on social media. But that when Keim and others posted today that Rivera put up a poster.
Yeah.
Door that said do your job. I'm like, yeah. You got a lot of balls, Ron. I mean, I'm sorry, but you got big balls because
you should have been on the door the first day of training camp, not today.
If there's anyone that didn't do their jobs in this organization, it was he and Jack Del Rio and Eric Bieniemy. I'm sorry,
well, but beyond that, it comes back to him because remember this roster is handpicked by Rivera. You cannot complain that it's the previous regime anymore because the only guys you've resigned to extensions are from the previous regime at this point. All of your all-stars are from the previous regime at this point. So this is your team now, Rivera. You're the grand poobah here, okay? The GM reports to you, not the other way around anymore. And that's the frustrating part, and that's why I don't think it'll ever work with Rivera. And I think we're seeing now that it's not, we're not going to have to see that. It's not going to work. But
I think if there was any doubt that he was had a chance to come back beyond this year, that
I think it's ended, gone. It's
that
yeah.
ended on Thursday night. I really feel that way.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, if you enjoy the BGO Blind Pig podcast, you may enjoy the video version. Visit YouTube and search BGO Blind Pig to access over 100 previous episodes. However you enjoy BGO Blind Pig, we thank you for listening.
But
maybe that's why we saw the look on Josh Harris's face that we saw in all his clips.
He said, all right, my question has been answered.
Watching the game and went, Ron just made this an easy choice.
Yeah.
It reminded me of that Doc McCoy line in Star Trek. I'm a doctor, Jim, not a magician. it had that kind of a vibe to it. Like, yeah, I'm the new owner, but I'm not Jesus come down from the cross. I can't fix this.
You know? Well, and you know, I think the thing that frustrated me, and John, your blog post was very timely. It was well-written. It was fantastic. I threw some thoughts up in that thread that I did clumsily, but I feel like all five of us, I'm counting Mark in this because he was part of the conversation preseason. I feel like all five of us, when the sale went down, we all said, this isn't the year. This isn't his team. This isn't the year. This isn't. And somewhere in the last several weeks, at least I lost sight of my reality before the season started. I had a very down-to-earth, unexpectant feeling about this season going into it. I felt like it was going to be a good season because we didn't have the specter of the former owner hanging over us. And it didn't matter if we went 0-17. And then this team won three preseason games. And didn't just win three preseason games, but I mean, they went to Baltimore and they acted like they wanted it. They wanted it more than the Ravens, who had a lot of pride on the line over that streak they had going in preseason. And they went to Baltimore and they took it away from them. And maybe I got a little excited. And then they beat Paul must be having technical difficulties. And then they, you know, and then they managed to squeeze one out opening day against the Cardinals. But we all looked at each other and went, well, you know, it's Hal's second. It's Hal's second start. And we were in the stadium. So, you know, we're, you know, we bring bad luck with us wherever we go. And then they came back from the dead to beat Denver. And I think we all started to get a little too excited. I know I did. I started looking at that and going, there's something here. Maybe there's a little magic in the barrel right now. And
then Buffalo happened.
And I got ahead of myself.
Against the Eagles.
I think Hal has a lot to do with that, too. For me, I think that's a really great point. That's like dead on, Bob. And I think for me, it's mostly because part of it is the karma thing that you talked about. Kind of being rid of, you know, Voldemort. But the other part is having a quarterback that can make the plays that we haven't had someone back there that could replicate that in a long time. I think that's also part of what got me sucked into maybe believing a little bit more than I should have, knowing what we've seen for the past three seasons. I think that's dead on, though.
Well, so, you know,
I'm on that. And I'll wrap a bow. I'll tie a bow around your post, John, saying hold on. Is to that point. This is what. I mean, look. Trevor Lawrence right now was coming into the league was supposed to be one of the most surefire draft picks ever, and then in his first season and a half, people were questioning whether or not he was going to be able to make it.
Mm-hmm.
There were the ups and the downs. These are the ups and the downs that teams that have their franchise quarterback go through. The only difference is this is happening with a guy picked in the fifth and not a guy picked 1-3, where you're forced to deal with it because of the commitment to them and the fact that you've got to deal with it for at least three seasons, because if you move on after two, then you're just going to, you know, You're committing coaching suicide. I mean, ask Cliff Kingsbury how he feels about that. But
fair.
I think watching what Sam Howell, look, man, there were some throws Sam Howell made this past weekend.
It's a bitch because it's all most of us have been able to muster over 25 years of desolation and disappointment.
I only bring that up because I feel like if we had Morgan Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
Narrate our post game sentiments. We could live with it a little bit more, man.
He's had that queued up for 3 days, Derek.
Yeah, he has.
Right, waiting for somebody to study.
That's right.
But Derek, I think part of our problem as fans is that Sam Howell's not really been the issue the last 2 weeks,
right?
Sam Howell's played damn good football for 2 weeks now. And if I had told you last week, if I'd said last week that Sam Howell was going to finish the game 57 of 51 for 388 with two touchdowns and an interception, would you have said we won that game or lost that game?
Look, to be fair, I'd say lost, because you shouldn't throw the ball 51 times unless you're losing.
Wow. Fair.
You wouldn't have said that against the Bears, though. And what, he's sixth in the NFL in passing yards right now.
Yeah.
And that's not to say, again, some of that is, like you said, Derek, it's, well, when you're down by 24 points.
It's kind of hard to run the football.
So it's not always indicative of great things happening on the field. But
I mean, the thing to hold
we
on
should
to.
Not be, we should not be where we are right now with this with sixth most passing yards in the league. We just shouldn't be.
But before we move totally on, the thing to hold on to with Howell, though, is take the stats out of it. Take the wins and losses out of it. We're seeing ability like we haven't seen in a long time.
At least Kirk Cousins and maybe well before that.
No, I would say Howell can make throws that we haven't even seen Cousins make.
So, Derek, you said something a minute ago I just want to circle back around to, and then we can move on to the Falcons game. If you guys want, but do you guys feel like Hal has shown enough already to come into 2024 as the presumed starter?
Yes. For me, yes.
If, hold on, if we were not changing coaching staffs, yes.
I'm not saying predicting whether or not he will be, but do you feel like he's shown enough that he should be?
No, but here's it. If we were not changing a coaching staff, absolutely 100% sign the guy to an extension today for a 3-year, $18 million a year extension, and you see what you can do. The thing, the whole X factor in this whole deal is the fact that chances are on February 12th, the day after the Super Bowl, there's going to be a different GM, a different head coach, possibly a different and likely a different offensive coordinator. That might mean that our current offensive coordinator becomes the head coach or whatever variation thereof. But that changes everything. That takes any what you believe is a they deserve in it, and it, you know, it kicks it out the window. I think he deserves every opportunity to be that guy, and whoever comes in after this, after Rivera and company are out, should have him slated as QB1 and go from there. If there's a better opportunity, then you pick your guy. They pick their, you know, the GM, head coach, offensive coordinator, pick who they want their quarterback to be in the future. But if all things were the same staff and everything, I absolutely believe he's done enough.
What do you think, Paul?
The only other thing I want to add in regards to that is I think some of it is going to be potentially dependent on where this team ends up in the standings. By all accounts, it sounds like this is an extremely deep quarterback class coming up this coming April. If I don't want to say this, but if we're a bottom five team, I don't think you can say, well, Sam Howell's our guy moving forward. I think you have to consider every single option. I obviously don't hope that we're in that predicament. But if we are, it sure would make for an interesting conversation going forward.
Yeah, the counter argument to that is I don't think his performance has a ton to do with our final record. I hate to say that. But yeah. I know what you're saying. You're saying if we're in the position to possibly draft a quarterback in terms of the draft position, but I would argue that's a perfect position because you can either trade out of it if you don't feel like you don't need a quarterback and get more draft capital, or you can get the best left tackle in college football or whatever you think you need. But I mean, it's just an academic conversation, obviously, as yeah. Derek said, we're not that they'll, whoever the GM is, hopefully the new GM.
We all know we're drafting a cornerback in the first round.
I'll be honest. I think the kid looks like a future franchise quarterback right now. He's got some things he's got to work on, but maybe that part of that is we haven't seen a decent quarterback in so long that I'm inflating, you know, what I'm seeing in my mind. But
yeah, some of his throws are just elite. Sorry, not to keep harping back on it, but some of his throws are just elite. But anyways, we do need to look forward at some point because it's been a very painful 44 minutes of conversation. So this weekend, I don't think Christian Watt. No, that's Green Bay. Jesus. Now Drake London scares me, but I think he can beat you. I was a big Desmond Ridder guy coming out of college. I think he's progressing. He's gotten better over the last couple of weeks, but I think he also is working with an inferior roster. I think we have a better roster top to bottom than Atlanta does, but I think they have the ability with a couple playmakers to really not only close that gap, but exploit our defense to the point where I don't think this game. I could easily see us losing this game. What do you guys think?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We want to make sure that you don't miss out on any future BGO Blind Pig podcasts. On our YouTube channel, simply hit the subscribe button. If you're listening to BGO Blind Pig via Apple Podcasts or another podcast provider, go to our description page and click that follow button.
I think that can certainly happen as well. The one thing I don't want to see this coming week is I don't want to see the approach that this team takes resulting in them beating themselves. I thought against Chicago, for instance, Del Rio's strategy and game plan defensively was the perfect recipe to allow Justin Fields to just settle in and have a pretty solid game. I personally thought in that game you needed to blitz the heck out of the guy, make him absolutely uncomfortable, and if he beats you, you tip your hat to the guy. And I see, and I think we need to do the same thing with Desmond Ritter this coming week. You need to blitz the guy to no end and make him beat you. And if he beats you, so be it. But don't sit on your hands and let the other team dictate what's going to happen. I think ultimately, like you were saying, Derek, the roster is better. But are the mechanics and the game plan on our side better? I think that's going to go a long way towards deciding a winner. And, you know, I hope we don't beat ourselves with poor game planning.
So I'm going to throw some stats out there. They have not lost at home. All three of their wins have been home wins against the Panthers, the Packers, and the Texans. Certainly not Dynamos, none of those teams. They did – two of the wins were by 2 points or less, so they've barely won two of them.
I believe they're also 9-3 in their last 12 at home, dating back to last year.
Imagine having a home field advantage. They lost to the Lions and Jags. As far as their offensive and defensive ranks, I'll run through those real quick. On offense, they're 20th overall in yards, 27th overall in points. Passing, they're 23rd in yards, rushing 13th in yards. So of all of that, really, they're better at the rush than they are at anything else. They're averaging 4.1 yards per rush. One thing about their offense, though, they've only scored 8 touchdowns this season. They're averaging like 16.6 points per game. I think we're at like 22, something like that. So we're a little bit more of a scoring offense. On defense, they're 7th overall in yards. So they don't have a lot of stars on defense, but they are pretty solid, especially against the pass. They're 7th against the pass in the entire league, and they're 15th against the run. So I don't know. I'm kind of where you are. When you look at their individual stature, like how do they win any games? Because Ritter's only had 4 touchdowns. He's had almost as many interceptions and fumbles as he has touchdowns. He's had 3 of each of those. He's been sacked 16 times. Bijan Robinson is a good back, but he's not run for a single touchdown this season. He's averaging like 5.4 yards per carry. And then,
well, that's yes, he hasn't run for one, but I think there was a viral video last week of a shovel pass to him. That was basically a run, but it goes down as a reception.
Yeah, he's got 2 receiving.
Yes. And then the wide receivers, like you said, Drake London has 2 touchdowns, 204 yards. Nothing. Mac Hollins is decent. Jonnu Smith is there, even though they've got a really good
tight end that they don't use.
Jonnu Smith, who I wanted us to grab in free agency, he is their leading receiver. He's got 246 yards receiving.
Kyle Pitts is their second leading receiver.
I know, yeah.
So their top 2 guys are tight ends. What's that tell you?
Well, and they egregiously underutilized Kyle Pitts. He just had his best game of the season last week, and he had 6-7 catches for less than 80 yards. And that guy is a physical freak. That guy is the modern day Jordan Reed. Like, he is on that level of physical ability.
And if we had not put up 3 points against Buffalo, if we had had just an average game, we would our offensive stats would blow them off the page. They're really not very scary or productive on offense. And I'm not saying that has anything to do with the outcome of this game. I'm just saying their offense, we should be able to have some success against their offense. On the defensive side of the ball, I think.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, 16 sacks. He is close to Howell, correct? I want to say he's been sacked in the top five of number of sacks this season.
Ritter's been sacked 16 times. Howell's been sacked 29.
Yeah, it's bad. That, nine, was off. That nine sack game.
That nine sack game definitely inflates it.
Yeah.
But
you know, I mean, so
they've only got five sacks all year, Atlanta, total.
Yeah, well, the Bears had two coming in last week, so that doesn't mean shit.
Ritter is not the physical freak that Justin Fields is.
He's not going to evade. He's not going to.
And, you know, when I went back through the tape, I counted four or five plays that absolutely would have been sacks. Chase Young would have had like a three or four sack game in the second half alone if Justin Fields were not the physical freak that he is. Desmond Ritter might be in for a long day if the defensive line shows up angry. That's assuming they show up angry. I don't know. Anybody listen to John Allen's interview with the Junkies? He sounded mad to me.
He sounded mad.
You know? And if all three of those guys, all four of those guys are that mad and they show up mad and they use it as fuel instead of playing out of control because they're mad, it could be a long day for Desmond. I hope it's a long day for Desmond. My concern is that it won't be a long day for Bijan Robinson because I watched Herbert gash us, just absolutely gash us last week. And he is not the back that Robinson is. Robinson would have been gone. A couple of those plays where Herbert broke off long plays.
Robinson doesn't get caught.
Taken those to the house. It would have been over. I'm very worried about that, to be honest with you, because our linebacking is not up to snuff, and it hasn't been up to snuff. That's the thing, right? The defensive line plays well in spurts, really well, dominantly well. Our linebackers haven't been dominant a single game this season.
Well, we've been bemoaning the passing defense all year, but the rushing defense, Washington is, let's see, they're 27th in rush yards per attempt. They're 24th against the rush, which is worse than our ranking against the pass. So we've, especially the last couple of weeks, we've just tanked in terms of being able to stop the run.
Well, see, and that's where I wonder. I don't know. I haven't gone back and looked, but I do actually really wonder where the fault lies. There is literally, are we missing a game breaking middle linebacker? Like, what's the schematic design? Are we supposed to be opening up that gap for the middle linebacker to plug? There's a lot of defenses in the NFL that have that. The whole point of the interior D lineman is to take the linebacker, the offensive linemen, and move them out of the blocking lane and allow your linebacker to come down and crash and stop the play where it is. I don't know. I'm not sophisticated enough in it to.
I don't know what Jack Del Rio's doing, man. And Jack Del Rio should be forced to watch the San Fran game against Dallas about 100 times with kind of like Clockwork Orange with his eyes held open.
You watch Paul. I see you nodding. Did you watch?
Yeah, and guess what? Right next to him should be Chase Young, and he should be focused on Bosa. So, I think honestly, guys, if the team that plays, and this is where it's so Jekyll and Hyde. I got here. All right, you know what? I'll tee it up. What do you guys think is going to happen? And I'll circle back around. Bob, what do you think?
I'll put myself on the sword first. I picked Washington. And I'm going to stick with that. I picked them in the pool. I'm going to do it here in front of God and everybody. I'm doing it as much out of professional pride and pain as anything else. And I don't mean me. I mean on the part of the players. I know how I would feel if I had 9-10 days to stew on what happened to me in front of national TV last week. I'd come out with my hair on fire to steal a Markism, right? because he couldn't join us tonight. I'd come out with my hair on fire. I'd be mad, and I'd be playing mad all game long. And so I'm going to bank on the professional pride of guys like John Allen and Daron Payne and Terry McLaurin and, God help me, Sam Howell, because the young man impresses me. And I'm going to bank on those guys to come out and just absolutely set the tone and do the job. Now, what the score is, God only knows. I can see us winning big. I can also see us winning stupidly tight because we're playing at their place. I don't know. I'm going to say 27-20.
So I'm looking at the Falcons having a better rushing attack than they do a passing attack. And I'm thinking that would lead you to believe that what we should do is go and stack the box and try to make Ridder beat us with his arm. But I have no belief in our defensive backfield. They look like they don't know what they're doing. They don't know how to do it. When they do know what they're doing, they're not able to do it. And Del Rio just doesn't seem to have any kind of answers when we're struggling in the backfield. So I'm afraid to stack the box. So I'm going to go the opposite and say I hope we pass it like 80% of the time on Sunday, because I think we can score on them. And I think if we score 24 points, they're going to be hard-pressed to win the game, because I just don't think they're very – they haven't scored a lot of touchdowns, and I don't expect that to change this weekend. But having said all that, I cannot pick us to win, and I'll tell you why, because I picked us to win against Philly by a point. I picked us to blow out Chicago, not that I'm the only one that picked us to do that. And I'm just tired of picking them. So I'm going to say Atlanta wins 24-23, and I hope I'll be happy if they prove me wrong, as they usually do.
You're doing that because Mark's not here, aren't you? Mark's not here to pick Atlanta, so you're doing Mark's job.
They've just beaten the home out of me, man, the last 2 weeks. I don't have anything left. What do you and got, they're undefeated at home. They have not lost at home. I think that matters.
I think you guys probably know where I'm going to go with this one. I'm not picking us to win. What I do think is I think this game is going to go a long way towards determining if Ron Rivera is able to hold on to this locker room any longer. I made a comment on one of our threads following the Chicago game that I personally thought that maybe that was the first sign that we're seeing this group starting to tune him out. So I think this game is going to go a long way towards determining even further if he's still got a firm grip on this group or if he's losing a bit of control. The last two times that we've played Atlanta, they've been really, really close games and we barely squeaked by. You'll remember that one game where McKissick had that, you know, game winning touchdown right towards the end of the game there with a really cool dive towards the end zone, if I'm remembering the correctly.
Pylon, yeah.
Yeah. Last year, it looked like we were on the verge of losing. Daron Payne tips that ball. Kendall Fuller picks it off in the end zone. Yeah, we end up beating them by 6 points. And, you know, we've just been squeaking by these guys. Bob, you're alluding to it earlier. Bijan Robinson might have his, you know, welcome to the NFL moment this coming week. We're giving up almost 5 yards a carry defensively. I'm really concerned about how that defensive line is and our linebackers and our entire defense is defending the run. I think that can make for a really long day for us. Defensively, we have to pressure Ridder. Like I said, Detroit and the Jacksonville losses were really, really ugly losses for Atlanta. They lost 20-6 and 23-7. And in those games, Ridder was sacked 7 and 4 times respectively. That's what we need to do. We need to like just literally give the guy zero room for comfort. And I have zero faith that Jack Del Rio will adjust or pivot in any fashion. He's just going to be his same old stubborn self. I can see us losing. I'm going to say it'll be close, 23-22.
Derek?
So the most Redskin thing ever would be to come out into this game as an underdog, because we are underdogs right now. I believe that the Falcons are favored by 1.5. And do enough to, Paul, as you put it, rope us back into believing. I've been thinking about this, you know, for the last 2 days before this podcast, where I thought, my gut tells me we're going to win this game and we're going to spark that hope back up. I would love to believe we're going to win it big, but I think ultimately it's a narrow victory. It's similar to what it's been the last two times we played them. I think the offense is better than what it showed last week. I don't think we've used Jahan Dotson. We didn't even talk about the fact that Jahan Dotson's been just a ghost this season.
Who's McLaurin?
Who's
McLaurin?
Not in the same. Have you seen Dotson's numbers? He hasn't even hit 200 yards.
No. I understand that. I'll go ahead and finish your thing, and then we'll come back to McLaurin.
Yeah, so I think there's something there. I think we have the ability. I think the better roster wins. I think the offense just finds its way a little bit after a long break. And I think the final scores will go 29-23.
So because we're talking close games so far in our predictions, I just want to mention one thing. Their place kicker's name is Young Ho Koo.
Yep.
And his longest kick in 2023 is 49 yards.
He does not have a big leg, but he is very accurate.
That could be and if it's a close game, that could be a factor. What were you going to say, Lauren?
I got curious today because – all right, Mike, let me ask you this question. Do you guys consider Terry McLaurin our undisputed number one wide receiver?
Wide receiver, yes.
I think it's close. I think Curtis – I know people are going to mock this, but I think Curtis Samuels is one of the most underrated wide receivers. I don't know where he stands.
I would agree with Curtis being underrated. I don't have a problem with that statement, John. I feel like all of us this summer thought Terry McLaurin was one of those bottom edge of the upper echelon in the NFL. He was in the same conversation with guys like Jefferson and Brown and Moore, but maybe a half step behind him. Not quite, you know, 1A to their tier one, right? And the reason everybody thinks that is because he hasn't had a quarterback. Now he's got a quarterback. Here are numbers for you. Justin Jefferson has 53 targets this season. A.J. Brown has 51 targets this season. Terry McLaurin has 31 targets this season. That's all.
Is that the most of our wide receivers?
No, that is the most on our team as far as
targets are concerned. Wide receivers go, yes, but that's
the most targets. McLaurin's been targeted 31 times. Samuels, 27. That surprised me. I didn't realize he'd been targeted that much. Logan Thomas, 25. Jahan Dotson, 30. That surprised me, too. Although Dotson's had a couple of very obvious drops that he didn't – balls he didn't drop last year. This year he has dropped. And then there's a big drop-off, right? Those are the top four. And then you've got Gibson with 16, Robinson with 11. Tommy Brown with 10, and everybody goes downhill from there. It just feels like McLaurin is not a focus. Now, maybe, I don't know, maybe EB's whole thought process is to not have a focus so nobody knows where you're going.
I think
it just feels like
I'm not sure he's 100% healthy either. I just want to throw that out there. He had the ankle, I think it was it plantar fasciitis or
he had turf toe.
Turf toe. So right, he had an injury that is like infamous for not being able to get over quickly. He doesn't talk about it.
True.
But I wonder if that's might be a little bit of it.
Fair. You know, it just feels like our guy that you go to when you absolutely positively have to have a play.
Logan Thomas.
And up until last week, I would have argued with you. Last week, Logan Thomas showed me something. Although, I can't even get mad about the fumble. Although, frankly, I think if Logan Thomas hangs on to that ball, we win that game.
I get mad about it. But, I mean, that's the thing with Logan Thomas. It's feast or famine, right? And
well, that wasn't on him. Where he had the ball. No,
John, he was fighting for yards. That was pure passion. He stayed up long. Than he should have.
Well, and where he had the ball, there were two.
If that was Gibson, if that was Antonio Gibson, you guys were calling for him to be benched, man.
Thompson doesn't right, but Logan Thomas doesn't put the ball on the ground very often.
He makes a lot of mistakes, though. He makes a lot of unforced errors.
Yeah,
but he played well, though. You're right. He played well.
He did. He played really well. But you know, I just feel like that for the last 3 or 4 years. The guy that you went to when you absolutely positively had to have a play was Terry McLaurin. And right now it feels like we go to anybody but Terry McLaurin when we absolutely positively have to have a play. And so this weekend, one of the things I'm looking for is getting McLaurin more involved. Go ahead.
No, the only thing I was going to add, Bob, was there's the concept of getting him involved, and then there's the concept of getting him involved early and getting the defense to start thinking about him. Right. He's been irrelevant in the first half of games.
They got him going early in the Philly game, like the first three catches.
Yeah, he had. I think he had three catches in the first.
You're right. That's the only game this year where.
But yeah, other than that, Paul's absolutely correct. Yeah. And I just feel like I've watched DJ Moore now, and I've watched AJ Robinson eat us alive, and I feel like McLaurin should be that guy.
AJ Brown,
especially Bob, especially when you consider that we have a lot of dangerous guys on the field with him. Mm-hmm. So you think that would open him up more, not less?
Yeah,
that's where it's on EB, right?
Well, and that was kind of where I was going. And what I was going to ask was, do you think that's because this is what the defense is giving Sam and Sam's making that choice? Or is EB calling plays that Terry is not the number one read on? Or some combination?
I don't know, man. You need to send that to Mark Bullock and ask him to check it out.
I mean, you would be the one to talk to. That guy knows his stuff. All right, boys.
So, Derek, did you pick us to win or did you pick us to lose?
I picked us to win 29-23.
Okay. All right. So, we're split.
Right, so, we're split 2-2.
We need Mark to be the voice of reason.
Yeah. To be perfectly honest with you, the most Redskin thing ever would be for them to come out this weekend and blow out the Falcons. Like, it just makes too much sense to me because we've seen it so many times. Where there's a big game, then there's a letdown. And right when you think things can't get worse, they come out and they suck you right back into it. You know, to Paul's original point.
Do we play the Giants after this?
Yes.
Yes.
So you know we're like prime candidates to make them look, to bring them back from the dead. So
Daniel Jones might not even play. He's not playing this weekend. Tyrod Taylor's their starting quarterback.
Injury though, right?
Yeah. He's in concussion protocol. I believe it was concussion protocol. He has not practiced yet. So that leads you to believe that he's not going to be ready for the game Sunday. So then, depending on what happens next week, he might not be ready for the following. Because if he hasn't practiced by Wednesday, usually it's about a 7 to 10 day before they get back in there.
And John, that New York game is at New York.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, where we thrive. I just want to thank Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys publicly for all that you do for us. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed watching them get their ass kicked. I really enjoyed that a lot of it. It made me feel just a little better.
Thank you, Jerry. Hurt a little bit less.
Thank you, Jerry.
All right, fellas. It's been a pleasure.
Always.
Night, boys.
Thanks for listening to BGO Blind Pig. Join us next time as we once again dive into the ups and downs of DC football fandom. And don't forget to check out our incredible community of Washington football fans at www.bgobsession.com.